Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Go To Food Podcast. Obviously, today we're delighted to be joined by the wonderful Sam Fidian Green. You've worked at some of the greatest restaurants in both the country and in Europe, obviously. You're also the proud owner of the Hilltop Kitchen, which we will get into shortly. But you've just acquired a pub called the Merry Harriers, is that right?
That is correct. We opened on the 17th of November.
Going well?
Going very well. Trading well, busy, good reviews. It's been a smooth opening.
Were you a customer of the pub before acquiring it? Do you know it well?
Yeah, we frequented it before. It's 10 minutes away from Hilltop, so down the road, and now very much proud to be at the helm.
Well, the pub you acquired is actually, well, was very famous for having llamas. You see llama treks in shepherd huts.
Yeah, the USP of the only pub with llamas.
Seriously?
Yeah.
What have you done with the llamas?
They have been moved on. They're now in Wales, and we are hoping to fill the paddocks with something that's a little bit more close to our hearts, which is our sheep from the farm. We really want it to be like the farm pub, you know, there always used to be, and now gastro pubs have got to a point where it's just burger and chips, fish and chips, or sort of standardized pub menus. We really want it to be focusing on everything that is from the area.
Take us through the menu. What's on there right now?
On the menu right now, we've used a lot of venison from a man called Albie, who culls venison in the area. He is the real McCoy. He's got one eye. He drives a Land Rover Defender. He's 87 years old, and he turns up with a deer over his shoulder, and some of the best venison I've tried, and he's got a license to cull venison throughout the year, so we're getting, you know, male deers in the summer when they're not in rut, and it's just the flavor of it has been really interesting to sort of see how it progresses through the year, and I definitely prefer venison out of season, and I've come to learn that through him. On the menu right now, we've got our Herdwick lamb. We do a lot of whole animal butchery. You know, we've got ox liver from our own cow on the menu at the moment, our first cow that we've ever culled, and two pigs that we're working our way through as well.
Nice.
How important are the snacks at the pub? Like, you come, sit down, first thing you really order in a pub, especially a gastro pub, what little plates are you doing for us? Just
beer snacks. I mean, beer, like, anything out of the deep fryer to go with a pint is essential.
Yeah.
It's essential. So we've got bubble and squeak croquettes with Ballymaloo relish.
Ballymaloo is in Ballymaloo?
Ballymaloo in Ireland.
Yeah. So what's their relish?
They make a tomato relish. It's like an Irish answer to ketchup, and it is tangy tomato relish, and it is just delicious.
So do you make that or do you buy that in?
We buy that in.
Okay. Supporting your old school, which we will get to in a second.
Yeah.
But keep going, because this sounds amazing.
We'll always have our Scotch egg on the menu, made with Cumberland sausage meat. It's a simple thing, done right. Soft-boiled egg.
You say soft-boiled egg, easy thing to do. You did one a couple of weeks ago, the egg was overdone. So what is the secret?
6 minutes into water. Six and a half minutes into iced water.
Really?
Yeah.
You forgot the ice water, didn't you?
I never went anywhere near ice water. But back in the day, I used to think, because a Scotch egg wasn't always a runny egg.
Traditionally, no.
Traditionally.
Yeah.
It might have been closer to like a fudgy egg.
Yeah.
And that's what I was playing out.
Okay, cool.
When I did.
It was a real throwback.
It was a throwback Scotch egg.
Okay,
yeah, yeah. I've literally just signed a waiver this morning for a book that's coming out. My head chef, Sally Abbe, is bringing out a book called The Woman's Place is in the Kitchen. And
are you breaking the NDA by telling us that?
Correct.
Am I not meant to do that?
No, I think definitely.
No, I was joking.
Anyway, yeah. And it's got a quite excruciating story that I read about learning how to make Scotch eggs for Sally and running out.
Yeah.
And a bit of target practice, that was me.
Really?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
she outlines how to make it in there when it comes out. So we've got those guys on the menu. We've also got tater tots with Philadelphia cream cheese and Blue Dragon sweet chili sauce on top.
Oh, classic. Just
that's a like good a one for the locals and everyone, really.
And also like a stoner throwback.
Yeah.
I mean, do you know what I mean? When you're sort of 19 years old and you're sitting around and be like, what do we have? And that's just like the perfect
Philadelphia sweet chili.
Yeah.
And there was a real phase of it when we were, I don't know, probably 10 years ago.
We
opened a thing in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Sweet chili sauce.
Empty the whole bottle on.
Yeah.
And everyone would.
There's nothing better.
Yeah, so we're bringing that one back.
There are some things better.
Yeah, there are some things better.
But it's all right, yeah.
And lamb ribs with roast garlic aioli are on at the moment.
Ooh.
And then the one thing I'm really enjoying, actually, is the crisp selection. Traditionally, in the pub, they've always done, you know, your slightly more upmarket crisp, your Pipers or your Kettles. We've gone Monster Munch pickled onion, Pombears.
Whoa.
Quavers, and we've got the scampi fries as well.
I suspect there's like a single factor from this podcast that drives people to the pub.
Yeah.
It might be that, which is depressing in some ways, but that is a great selection of crisps. Yeah.
And incredible food menu as well. Your father's obviously a very well-known artist, but you studied ancient history at Manchester Uni. What led you to become a chef?
I think leaving Manchester, I think I was sort of following the education system and went school, got to go to university, went to university, did a degree that I love, you know, I love the subject. But when it came to leaving, everyone was sort of going down this route of further education, grad schemes and internships. And I don't know, it was the one thing that I really enjoyed doing was cooking dinner in the evening. And I cooked for Sally Clark, who's a family friend. And she said to me once, you got to come into the kitchen one day and come work for me. And Dad was always, you know, encouraging in as far as he's, you know, he didn't say you have to do anything traditional. He just said, you got to do something with your hands and something a bit more creative. So it was
same advice his father probably gave him. Hence why he's one of the greatest artists in this country. But talking about Sally Clark's, you obviously go work there. Yeah. Were you in the bakery or the restaurant?
In the restaurant. I did a month there off the back of university. And she then posted me to do its stages in different restaurants around London. Amazing summer. That was when I fell in love with kitchens, and I fell down this rabbit hole that was like, I liked the energy of it, and I liked the speed of it. And
so where was she sending you?
I went to the Providors, which isn't there anymore, the Providors and Tapper Room.
Like Peter Gordon.
Peter Gordon. Yeah. They put me on the cold section there.
Cool.
That was wicked. Went to the Wolsey for a week and the DeLorney.
Oh, love the DeLorney.
I did a couple of days in restaurant Gordon Ramsay.
Sorry, quickly, is there a better dining room than the DeLorney or the Wolsey? I mean, the actual interior.
The Wolsey, amazing dining room.
I like the DeLorney as well, though. Makes you feel like you're back into the
Vienna. Does it sparkly? Yeah. Pre-theatre. There we go.
Sorry, just got excited there. Talking about Sally Clark, I mean, I only ever been to Clark's once, sat in the back in the little conservatory bit or whatever it is. Sort of an estate agent looking guy, sat at a table by himself, pack of fags in front of him, not much going on. And then suddenly I look up again. I was having an interview for a job from this guy who treated me to lunch, didn't get the job. I look up and Prince Harry's there. And they're just
hold on, he was the estate agent?
No, he was with the estate agent. But he just said, I've just got engaged. It was just when he got engaged and everyone loved him. And then the tide's turned.
Yeah.
But anyway, you then head off to Ballymallow Kicking School after these sort of little work experiences. How was that? Because we hear a lot about the magic of that place.
Mm.
Incredible. Super inspiring. I mean, it really teaches you so much more than just cooking and seasoning. In fact, it doesn't really prepare you for professional kitchens, but it definitely showed you the best lettuce that you've ever seen, or the best version of something, or how good the ingredients really can be, rather than the actual cooking a service and how to season something. It instilled something that I've seen in lots of chefs. You know, I think chefs like Merlin, who's got Orsip, that they are so in touch with the ingredients and where they come from, I think. And that's something that seems to be lost in a lot of restaurants today, I think.
Was Merlin there with you or no?
No. I think I'm not sure when he was there, to be honest.
But he went there?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's brilliant. I went to it. I mean, what a place.
Amazing,
to Britain?
Yeah. I've
been to the pharmacy a couple of times.
Yeah.
Great dining experience.
Oh, great little village there. There's also a guy called Matt's Kitchen, who basically worked out that everyone's going on these commutes down to Bruton for a weekend. And yet there's only three great places, the pharmacy, OSIP, and then the...
At the chapel?
Yeah, the chapel.
And I guess the bar and grill, Rothbard.
The four places.
Half all right.
You need one more meal. And he basically worked out that if he opened a little kind of two-course set menu place...
He'd lap everyone up.
You put that into your weekend, he's fucking brilliant, smokes in the courtyard. It's just great fun, takes you out to the pub afterwards.
Complete the village.
Yeah, and he cooks it all himself and serves it all himself.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's absolutely brilliant. If you're down there, go check it out. But what is Ballymallow like? Is it kind of like a boarding school environment, you'll get pissed in the evenings or what?
Exactly. I think like that, except on a farm, and everyone's living in their own little cottages with their own wood burners, and you're going down to the Blackbird pub on a Tuesday night and you've got your weekends to go out and cork.
What was the greatest dish you learnt there? I mean, I know you didn't say it was really about the dishes, but was there something which lives long in the memory there?
Making bread with Tim, I think. Learning how to make bread with him was amazing, and that was sort of done with those that wanted to do it outside of the hours, and just baking bread with him was heaven.
Who's Tim?
Tim Allen is Dorina's husband, and they're a real family company. You know, they all have their part to play there, and he I think looks after the bread. I'm not sure what else he does there as well, but
I'm sure he fills his time.
Do you still bake a loaf every week?
Yeah, very much.
What do you make?
Focaccia at the Hilltop, we bake fresh every day before lunch service. It's always a bit of a race, but it works just about. I love making fresh bread.
What about you, Ben? When was the last time you made a loaf?
The last time I made a loaf of bread was the last night / this morning.
Really?
To bring here.
Hey,
and I absolutely fucked it.
Oh, what happened? Will we see?
You'll see, yeah. I'm going to bring it out.
Okay,
And force feed you some not very good focaccia.
Well,
but maybe you give me some tips on how I've screwed it up.
Talking about focaccia, you may have learned that in Rome. I mean, obviously you're working with Tim in Ireland, but you then go to Rome, I believe, to work for the legendary chef Alice Waters, godmother of farm to table food.
In Rome?
Yeah.
Yeah.
At the Rome Sustainable Food Project. What is the, because cool. I was reading about it online, it seemed like you sort of cook, I thought it's been cooking for like those in need, but it seemed to be cooking for
scholars, cooking for the Rome. I didn't know a thing about these academies that they even exist, and they're still almost kind of a little bit fictional in my mind, that these creatives and musicians can win a scholarship to go and be in this amazing, basically a palace on top of the hill in Rome, where they further their studies, and they can be there for 6 months, a year.
Is it the British school in Rome?
No, it's the American Academy. They're all Americans doing amazing things. There was one guy who just sat down at lunch. He said, "I'm just researching trash, and I'm just here studying Rome waste through the history, since the ancient times." They were doing and we were basically catering for them, and the food was awesome. There was zero wastage. We were always looking at what was left over from the day before. The dinners were a bit more plated, but the lunch was very much a buffet, all made with fresh produce delivered by a sort of wacky farmer that they used. That was great. And living in Rome and going out to eat in the evenings.
Yeah, amazing.
And we didn't get paid very much, but enough. You don't need very much there.
No.
Where were the best places you're going? Trastevere or?
Trastevere was on our doorstep and was always good for a cocktail on the way to dinner, but going down to Testaccio, which is the old meat market where they've got these famous offal restaurants. Mm. There is actually a pile of broken terracotta pots where they brought the olive oil in up the Tiber. And when the olive oil was decanted to go out to the markets, they just throw these big vessels in a pile. And it's now become, I think, something like a sort of 25-meter hill. And round the hill, they used to store wine once upon a time because it's basically, I climbed on it once and it is just a pile of broken pots.
Yeah.
And they kept wine cellars there for a long period of time where they'd aged wine. And now there's a ring of restaurants around the edge and they're doing the proper old Roman offal. And there's one dish there that I'd go back. I mean, it's got to be on my list somewhere, that's called piatta, which is baby lambs' intestines. It sounds proper gross, but they tie up the intestines and milk-fed lambs, and they braise them in a spicy tomato sauce. And they go, the milk inside of them sort of turns into like a ricotta and is really delicate. And then they chop them up, serve them with rigatoni and pecorino romano.
Yeah.
It's just delicious.
Sounds amazing.
Should we get out our first sort of little section, which is the drink section? We bring out a couple of drinks for you. Ben's in charge as the mixologist supreme. What have you?
I've used what the hell is no that? Imagination.
Have you just pulled that from the corner randomly, or did you bring that with you?
No, I brought okay. These with me. I travelled on the train.
What are they? They're sort of demi pints.
Yeah, demi pints of Surrey cider.
Oh, very nice.
Slash
what?
Lovely.
Oh, slash master producer. Was it even from Surrey?
This side has never been anywhere near Surrey, no.
Okay.
Just thought we're going to talk about your pub.
Cheers. Yes. Lovely to meet you again.
And we could have a drink of cider.
I think that's a very good idea. As we sip on this unauthentic Surrey or Somerset cider, what's your go-to cocktail?
It's an obvious choice, but it's a Negroni. My business partner, the year that we opened Hilltop, took a bottle of gin, vermouth and Campari, launched them all into a jar with a whole load of damsons and just put the lid on it, left it for about a month, and it just took all of the flavor and just gave it a little sweetness. And that was probably the best. I mean, there are how many different ways of making a Negroni? I don't know, but that was one of the best.
So a damson Negroni?
Yeah.
Are you going to have that on the menu again this summer?
Yeah, definitely.
Pre-supper, you've got a Negroni on the go. Ben's come around for supper with his wife, not just Ben himself. What little snacks are you putting out? These are the things we like to know. Like, if you're hosting a little dinner party, before you sit down, what little bits do you have out?
A friend of mine introduced me to Asian beef tartare with prawn crackers. I cook a lot of Asian food at home, and this was a really tasty combo.
Yeah.
Take us through it.
Finely diced shallots, chopped coriander, fish sauce, a bit of just sugar, brown sugar, diced beef in a nice big bowl of that with prawn crackers.
Unbelievable.
Fresh lime on top.
God, beats a fucking pack of Torres crisps, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's a serious little snack pre. That's amazing. Are you cooking lots of Asian stuff?
I do cook quite a lot of Asian stuff.
Or do you feel quite ashamed?
No, I feel I feel ashamed during every episode, to be brutally honest with you.
Fair.
But that sounds delicious.
That does sound incredible. What are you going to be drinking with that meal?
I think a big buttery glass of Chardonnay.
Nice.
Big,
nice.
Oaky Californian Chardonnay.
Really leaning into that.
That does sound absolutely great. I mean, you know exactly what most people go, wine or beer, and you've actually given us a big...
Specifics.
Bucket. Yeah, that's incredible.
Big, tasty Chardonnay.
Yeah, nice.
You don't often get up to London because you're incredibly busy, I imagine, down in Surrey, running two businesses. But when you do, you come out in the town, you have a big night. What would be your go-to hangover cure the next day, drink-wise? You know what? Give us drink and food together. Why not? Treat us.
Drink and food. I mean, it depends on how hungover you are. If you're in a really... I mean, normally a bottle of fizzy water. But if you're really in a dark place, Coca-Cola is the black magic.
Yeah.
I think if you're hungover, you're always on the move, and there is... probably no better food for being on the move and hungover is a Cornish pasty with cold ketchup, ideally.
Oh, really?
You can source that. Yeah.
What, as in like freezing cold ketchup?
From the fridge.
Fridge cold.
Yeah. Do you keep your...
Onto a hot pasty.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
What's in the pasty?
The classic steak pasty.
Yeah.
Okay. So hot steak pasty with freezing cold ketchup.
Who's your dealer?
I mean, the Cornish pasty shop's always there. He's the guy that's always there. Yeah. I mean, if you're down in Cornwall, you're a lucky man.
I like the cheese and onion pasty.
Morning drink of choice. What are you drinking every morning you get up for work? What are you doing?
Coffee. That's a no-brainer.
Yeah?
In which form?
They change through the day. I normally start off with a dry cappuccino. Because I've been...
A dry cappuccino.
Okay. Working in a coffee shop, I've gotten to know. I've tried most of them now, I think, but they keep changing.
So what's a dry cappuccino?
It's a short cappuccino.
Yeah.
With the cocoa powder on top, and it's a short, because I don't like a really milky coffee.
No.
It's longer than a macchiato, but shorter than a flat white.
Sounds amazing.
I love that.
Yeah. Dry cappuccino. I'm going to try order that later.
So that's the
first.
I'm going
to get slapped if I order that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it depends on where you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And then it escalates from there?
And then you start removing milk as the day goes on, because you want you need that caffeine to kick in quicker later on, I think.
So have you developed the classic sort of chef's
short
caffeine
black
addiction?
Yeah. Probably 3-4 coffees a day.
When I left the kitchen, I had what I was calling heart attacks, like almost every day.
Yeah.
Like palpitations, and I was like, I'm dying, this is terrible. And I finally got an appointment with the doctor, and they did tests. I went on a bike. They were worried about me, because that's not normal for your heart to sort of feel like it's stopping every day. And then he did this long questionnaire, and he asked me how much coffee I drank. And I was like, well, probably if I'm doing a double, I might have like a cafe correcto, which is like cafe with grappa in it, before.
That on a double shift.
So I would like all day be drinking coffee. Then before the evening shift, I'd have that. Then you might have another couple of, and he was like, you're drinking like 24 double espressos a day.
And grappa.
And with grappa. Yeah. And so he was just like, what's happened is your heart, over like 8 years in the kitchen, your heart has got used to being driven by that.
Oh my God.
And what's happening is your... or just your heart's forgetting to beat sometimes.
Oh my God.
So I had to get out of the game.
That is worrying.
It's terrifying.
Word of warning there, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Stay off the cafe corretto.
And the coffee.
Yeah, and don't work 90-hour weeks.
When you come back to London, you obviously go and work in your first Michelin star location, Harwood Arms.
Yeah.
Famous for its Sunday roast. Now, is it that good? Sunday roast is a big debate topic. Are the Sunday roasts that great at Harwood Arms?
Yes, they are. Yeah.
Okay, what makes them good?
It's the right amount of dirty that I think is, and refined, that... It's a balance, because it's got to be heavy going. It's got to be it's got to come out of the deep fryer. You kind of need some decent vegetables as well to offset that balance. And it's just, they do it right. They do it to order. It's bloody delicious, that roast.
What were your favorite dishes when you cooked there? Like when you look back, we like to ask.
I like the sharing food that they do. I really like the sharing food. Always, sometimes, a whole kind of pork tomahawk for two people to share. Always having mackerel on the menu was great, and we did mackerel in different form. Mackerel, torch mackerel with pickled cucumber was a definite favorite of mine.
There's some amazing people that have come through the Harwood Arms.
Yeah,
was there anyone from your time there that was?
I worked with Sean Garrett, who's the head chef of the Pig and Butcher, and got a great reputation there. Worked with Sal, was my head chef. She's now of the PEM, and soon to be this cookbook that reveals some Scotch egg disasters.
What station were you on in there?
I did all of them. I went from the bottom all the way to the top there.
Obviously, you're in Fulham, right?
Yeah.
So where do you go when you finish a shift? Like, what's the chef's not out? Do you get on the booze most nights? Give us a bit of the rock and roll side of I know you're now down in Surrey, you're getting married, we get it, Sam. But give us a bit of those rock and roll times.
Yeah. Okay. Got my girlfriend at home.
Yeah, yeah.
It was always back to someone's house for an all-nighter. Yeah, it was really...
Sort of drugs, booze and everything involved, don't
we? Yeah, all of the above.
Any food? Ironically not.
No. I think you're done with food for the day, the weekend.
Sunday roast, they limit just to the Sundays. Seeing as they're known for the roast, do you think they were ever tempted to put them on sort of daily?
No, I don't think so.
No?
I think you fall out. We're trying to work this one through at the pub at the moment. It's like, I love fish and chips, but I don't want to do it every day.
No.
I love the Sunday roast. I don't want to do it every day. As a chef, you know, we're doing our fish and chips just on Friday lunch, and I think you got to keep the Sunday roast. I mean, you wouldn't want to eat a Sunday roast every day.
No. But then they are known for it, aren't they? But then their other food is as
known
good.
For other things as
well.
Yeah.
You then decide to leave the Harwood Arms and you head to Denmark to go work for Paul Gunning, two Michelin star restaurant. Now, you're going to have to give me a helping hand here. Is it Henny Kirkeby Crow?
Henna Kirkeby Crow.
Henny Kirkeby.
I think.
What was it like moving?
Danes would agree with that, but
from central London to a remote part of Denmark. Why did you do it? How did it come about?
Why did I do it? I'd done. You know, we touched on it. Two years of working in a busy, fast-paced London. You know, the Harwood Arms. I was pretty burnt out. I actually went initially. I did 10 days silent meditation on a cushion, just off straight. Left the Harwood, drove home. I managed to write my car off on the way home because I was so exhausted from 9 or 10 doubles. I got put on the Savage last
week. Yeah.
And I actually fell asleep at the wheel. Christ. So I got, I went to Nepal to take a little time out.
You went to Nepal?
Yeah, I went to Nepal.
That's amazing.
I always wanted to go to Mount Everest, did a big trek there and 10 days of just silent reflection. So that's really why I left.
What goes through your head in that, like coming off the back of that?
Oh, everything.
Your mind must wonder.
Trying to meditate is hard, and I'm still, you know, even after that, I wouldn't even pretend to say that I'm good at it, but it's a great tool for trying to close it down, and when you're coming off the back of that, what's going through your head? I mean, everything.
Yeah.
It doesn't stop. It's racing.
And you saw Paul Cunningham's little face coming at you, and you thought, I've got to go and see the man.
It was funny turning up after that. I then went to Henna. Turned up, walked into the kitchen. I didn't, you know, I knew that Paul Cunningham was at the helm, but I assumed it would be a sort of Danish kitchen speaking. I didn't really know what to think. And turn up, and Gary Dawson is there, Paul Proffitt, and Paul Cunningham all sitting in line. And they said, "Would you like a cup of tea?" Yes.
Yeah.
in the name of a place that I can't really pronounce. That was a real lifeline and very welcoming people and really inspired people, actually. I had a great time working for them, living out in the west coast of Denmark, which is a bit dull. But it was.
What do you do in your off time there?
Go to Copenhagen some weekends. We lived in a staff house there with five other chefs. Did COVID, the first part of COVID there as well. We got quite resourceful. A lot of mushroom foraging.
Illegal mushrooms or?
No, not the fun ones. Not just piles of seps.
Yeah.
I remember going out with my mate Max and we found, must have been close to, I don't know, a kilo or two of them. It was extraordinary. We were just working out all different ways of cooking them.
Yeah.
But obviously they were known for living off the garden, right? They had a 4,000 square foot garden where you got quite a lot of your veg from, and then also did they reared their own cattle as well, did they, or pigs or something?
We had a couple of sort of show pigs, but the garden was great. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, they're robotic.
They'd sat there for so long, and then you'd want to eat one of them. But the garden was brilliant. It looked stunning always, and I didn't love being in the shit running for more herbs in the garden, but it was nice on the days that you weren't so behind. But
because what's his he's a bit of a visionary, Paul Cunningham.
Yeah,
I think I read. Is this right? He was originally going to be Noma.
Yes,
or be the chef at Noma, and then he suggested Renan Redzep. Is that?
Yeah, exactly. And I think he is very much a godfather of Danish cuisine, as even just from that conversation.
Yeah,
he suggested Rennie.
And is that the style in which he is cooking there?
Not
that kind of no. Right. Okay.
Very, very close to sort of British nostalgic food with some Danish, you know, in there as well. But watching him plate food was brilliant. He did lots of curry spice dishes,
like
monkfish masala and potatoes with black truffle and butter. It was just like straightforward, delicious food done on a two Michelin star level that was amazing to see.
What was the hardest thing to adapt from, like, obviously the Harwood Arms to there? In terms of, was it a real step up for you in terms of cooking?
Oh, that's a good question. Going from a busy, fast-paced one Michelin-style restaurant to a 40-cover fine dining restaurant. I think it was a step sideways, and I think it was confusing initially. You know, you had to slow down. You had to look a bit more closely at what was really happening in front of you. It was a welcome change at that point, I think.
How often did the menu change there? What were some of your favourite?
Every 6 weeks, they do a full menu change, and that was that was hard graft.
What were some of your favourite dishes then? 2 years there.
The first snack you get given is a poppadom. That was the only thing that stayed, and it was the amuse-bouche, and it was the first thing you eat. And it was brushed with lime pickle, mint yogurt, mango chutney, diced cucumber, tomatoes, and coriander on top. And it just tasted like everything a Friday night curry should be in one bite at the beginning of the meal. And it was
so cool. How's he doing this food out on the west coast of Denmark, wherever you said it was?
Yeah, two mission stars.
How is he doing? I don't know. They just are.
People lapping
they
it
just
up.
They are. They're fully booked, lunch and dinner, and long may it continue.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Did they all?
You know, I've never eaten there as a guest, and it is on top of my list of things to do is take Goose and go for a long weekend of pure indulgence there.
On your days off, did you enjoy the Danish food? I mean, what were your favourite, simple Danish dishes which you enjoyed eating?
Yeah, Danish lunch is, I think it's one of the best bistro lunches you can have, to sit down and have the smørrebrød, which I still don't know if I can get.
I think you did well.
With, you know, all different bits on toast with bacon. Always beef tartare was there, and there was always schnapps and beer.
Yeah, nice.
It's just a flipping fantastic lunch. Deep fried plaice on bread with remoulade.
Oh.
With a dill schnapps. Just heaven.
Is there a lot of dill out there, I can imagine?
Yeah, lots of dill.
Yeah. Dill's a wonderful herb. Some don't like it. I think it's incredible.
Yeah, I like
where
it.
Do we all stand on the dill scale?
Love dill.
Love dill?
Love dill.
Love dill. Wonderful. I'm glad we cleared that
dill,
up.
Dill, pickly bits. Yeah.
Yeah. Kimchi good. Nowadays, I put in everything. Even like French food.
Really?
Yeah, just everything. I think kimchi goes with everything.
Kimchi? Really.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
Headlines, you heard it. Kimchi.
Yeah.
One of the most aggressive flavours in the world goes with everything.
It does.
I don't think.
Oh, I like it though.
We love to talk about chef meals on this show. What was the best sort of chef meal you ever had? Star food, star meal.
Star, yeah.
Best star food I've ever had. Oh, I mean, I've got a chef that works for me at the moment that he can just make it work out of almost nothing.
Really?
He did. I mean, I was sitting, now that I'm doing these sort of admin shifts, which I'm really not enjoying, and I sat through two back-to-back accountancy meetings, and I was just about to lose the will to live, and he did a mushroom risotto the other day with grilled chicken, and it was just...
Brought you back.
So good. that particular meal. Was.
Are you checking stock takes, though? Because I found when people were producing extraordinary family meals and telling you it was just from like little, oh no, just things are left in the back of the walk-in, and then you look at the stock take, you're like, you've been helping yourself to to the proper stuff. Yeah,
it's too good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's too good.
In the Michelin star places, could you tell that the star food was like Michelin star level, if that makes sense?
Yes, the henna was the best staff grub I've seen.
So what was it? Come
on. I mean, whole baked cod tails. One of the best meals was just a really good croque madame made by Paul Prophet.
For those who don't know what a croque madame is, I mean, no shit, but...
It's croque monsieur, which is what? Mustard bechamel in between, in a ham and cheese
toasty. Yeah.
With a fried egg on top makes it a madame.
Post-Denmark, you were going to go work for the legendary Michelin star chef Phil Howard in France. COVID hit, and so you were forced into lockdown. But that then gave you a spark to start your own empire. Now, tell us about these takeaways.
I mean, it didn't give me a spark. It gave me absolutely fuck all to do. I was... I was living with my parents. I was, you know, late 20s. I didn't have a job. My dream job had just been taken away from me, as you'd said. It was, you know, one of the many jobs that I'd love to have done, actually.
Yeah.
So rolled into January, slightly depressed, not too sure what to do. The only thing that, you know, we really love in, you know, growing up in the countryside, and I now live in the countryside again, me, my brother, and my dad, we'd love a takeaway. We, you know, the whole family sit around on Friday night. We don't have our go-to restaurants or our, you know, this is the neighborhood restaurant. We've got one or two pubs around, but it is the takeaway. So we started off with Mo and me making homemade dim sum, Korean fried chicken. We called it a Chinese takeaway. I don't think it was, but we did it for about 25 just local family members. The next week, we ended up doing, I think it was a French night it jumped up to 50 people. We did a confit duck leg with hoisin sauce and tart tatin for pudding. And then the next week, we did an Indian takeaway. That was fucking great, actually. Homemade samosas was a highlight of that one with green chili and coriander in it. Big. We made Peshwari naan. I mean, it was really just like
you had time on your hands.
Really cooking without anything else to do. There wasn't, you know, we were running a takeaway, so there was no ego involved. It was just like, what did we want to have? We called it the Friday Night Delight.
Were you like posting a menu and people were?
Yeah. And then it just kept growing. And we did, we maxed out at about 100 people. And we started off going like, right, we're going to cook it. We're going to serve it hot. Cause that's what I know how to do. We're going to serve hot food so everyone's come pick it up. And then realized very quickly, well, we're going for 100 people. There's no chance you're doing that on Mum's old Arga, which was cold half the time. Yeah. And we were trying to run a restaurant service. Come on. Yeah. I kicked the Arga one night.
Really?
I was so annoyed with you.
Rage.
Yeah, I lost that. So I ended up with a cold Arga and a sore toe.
It's a brutal combo.
We did an American night. I ended up getting my friend Sean down to come and help, and we did an American night together. We turned the... As this was sort of going along, Alex and me were having these exciting meetings about Hilltop was sort of in its embryonic phase and evolving. And I was using the money from the takeaway to buy the kitchen equipment. And I converted my mum's dog room into a prep kitchen where I had Sean, who's a Michelin star, you know, head chef there. I had a Hobart bread mixer in the corner, a Henkelman vacuum machine, and I even there was a nasty BBC article that scared the granny out of me that came out about, they described it as cowboy takeaways, and I didn't want to be lumped in with that. Yeah. So I then got my mum's home kitchen signed off with the AHO. And it's a farm kitchen in the countryside. It's not, you know.
What did they give you? Five stars?
I think we got 3 stars.
It's good enough.
That was the most stressful hygiene inspection I've ever undergone. Just before she turned up, I remember I just shut the cat in the cupboard under the stairs, just sort of licking the butter dish in the corner. I think I found it about 2 days later. Yeah. We were really going for it on the takeaways and then the Hilltop. And that kind of just gave me the confidence to keep going and keep working for myself. As I said, Alex and me were just sort of getting wheels to open Hilltop, which opened June that summer.
Well, we are going to come back to Hilltop in a second, but as you talked about takeaways, it's a perfect time to talk about your go-to takeaway outside your own business, of course, where we're going to go quickly through your go-to food section and then get onto the wonderful success story, which is the Hilltop Kitchen. So when you tell us your go-to delivery order, Sam, Ben is going to reveal something from his bag of mysteries.
Yeah, but I'm not.
Oh, you're not?
No, I am. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Okay.
It's just not... I basically need your advice.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then don't.
Produce two things that are shit.
Get them both out on the table. What have you produced? Some Coleman's mustard.
To be fair, these aren't shit.
Before we started recording, you did reveal that, and it is tin foil, and Sam guessed sausage rolls.
Yeah, this is actually not, you guessed right.
Oh, you guessed right.
Ah, fuck these. The sausage meat is good, but.
They look very good.
It's just a sausage roll, a little fennel and chili. They're not the thing.
I had a sausage roll on the way here.
Oh, really?
Yeah. These look better.
No, these are all right, but they're not.
They look great. So fennel and chilli, sausage roll.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well, we'll definitely get involved.
They're all right. But then the thing that I really fucked.
Go on.
And this is embarrassing because I have written sandwich book after sandwich book.
An award-winning sandwich book, Times bestseller.
Very proud of my focaccia.
Yeah.
But this fucker just, like, look at the state of it.
Actually looks pretty good.
It does not look good.
Does
it's like
good.
A crumpet.
What do you think, Sam?
It doesn't look great.
It doesn't look great.
It doesn't look great. I mean, it a very good crumpet, for sure.
Should we call it a crumpet?
Yeah.
Crumpet for Gacha. Congratulations. What's gone wrong there?
Can you analyse? You can have a little feel if you want.
It looks like it's overproved. And then just really? Sort of all the crumbs gone uniform and bubbly rather than...
He's being brutal.
No, but it's true. Because when I cut it open, I was like, well, I wasn't setting out to make a crumpet.
No.
And it should be like fat and bubbly, and the one that, you know, Max.
It looks like it's sort of come up and then collapsed, and you've got that uniform.
I've taken my eye off the ball.
Yeah.
Fuck. You've been out of the kitchen too long. It's too much coffee and too much fucking.
Too much coffee.
too much booze.
How many coffees went into making it?
Yeah. No, that's the problem. I'm not on the coffee anymore.
What's your go-to delivery order? Please feel free to get involved in these. Tell us what your go-to delivery order is.
Go-to delivery order is, at the moment, Person takeaway, Thai takeaway in Chalford.
And what are you ordering?
Chicken Massaman. His chicken and cashew nuts with sticky rice. And then probably, takeaway is all about having lots of different bits and bobs.
Yeah.
So a few of the different starters.
It's something going into that focaccia.
Yeah, I'm
going
to make a sandwich.
Oh, he's going to make a sandwich. Eat it. That's incredible. I can't wait. Do you want to try this fennel and chili sausage?
I'm just embarrassed.
I apologize. As you do, and if you want some mustard, it's there. Dish you cook the most midweek? I mean, you're a chef. You're obviously probably quite tired of cooking, but...
I mean, I cook mostly Asian food at home because it's so different. You know, I love the Italian food that we do at Hilltop, the English food that we do at the pub. But Asian food, I love to cook at home. San choy bao, a lettuce cup, something quite fresh with sort of Thai-styled lard in it, fried pork mince.
Have you been trained in that food?
Sally, we used to make it. I think Sally Abe started it at the Harwood, and I've just... as a star food, and it's just delicious.
So currently, for those listening, Ben is dragging a lot of dry cured
just trying to bring it back from the
what
brink.
Is that pastrami I can see over there? Prosciutto?
Prosciutto.
It's a bit of prosciutto with what looks like a whole
burrata premium mozzarella
on a focaccia crumpet is what we're calling it. And as he keeps on doing that, what's your go-to three-course dinner party?
Szechuan food, probably something easy, like smack cucumbers. I made a salad from it the other day that is basically just cos lettuce with the sesame dressing with chili oil, soy sauce, tahini in the dressing. So there's that. Some probably got the Vietnamese beef tartare with prawn crackers as a starter, and then a Kong Pao chicken with cashew nuts.
Ugh, unbelievable.
What are you doing to finish off?
I mean, this is against the rules, but my favorite pudding is Christmas pudding.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, isn't it quite dense and boring?
No, it's just
delicious. For
why is
delicious.
It so good?
It just tastes of like spices and sherry, and you can have a
brandy cream or butter.
Probably brandy cream.
Yeah.
Keep it a little bit lighter.
Nice.
Okay. What food reminds you of being a kid?
Do you want Britain's heaviest sandwich?
It looks incredible.
Please don't try and eat it all because
were your parents good?
I'll definitely get involved. Thank you. Well, you're not going to have it off.
No, because you see, this is like a quarter of my focaccia.
Oh, right, sorry.
And I was eating my feelings after it came out of the oven.
Really good. Tastes good.
Tastes good?
Mm.
It's just, I'm so sad. I wanted to make this beautiful focaccia.
Just biting into a prosciutto, burrata, basil, focaccia crumpet.
It's a good sandwich, right?
It's good.
No one can.
It's actually the right kind of height for a sandwich. In a weird way, that focaccia, because you can get your lips around it. Sometimes well,
I was going to pretend it was like some sort of specific thing.
No. Well, we're going to come on.
It's a fucked focaccia.
Yeah. Obviously, Sam's focaccia and his incredible Hilltop. But first, before we get there, what food reminds you of being a kid? Last week, Ben told us that his mum was an awful cook. She used to
I have to apologise. My sister just sent me a text, actually.
Oh, saying what?
I made you a plate, Sam.
Thanks.
Saying I missold my childhood.
Mm.
And I did missell my childhood.
You were playing up to the cameras.
Yeah, I was showing off.
Okay.
We used to go on holiday to Mauritius.
Yeah.
So I don't know what I said. We did go to the Hyde Imperial as well, but
okay.
Yeah. Sorry, Sam.
My mum's good at the sort of getting the food on the table for the kids. But dad's a very sort of theatrical Sunday dad cook.
Yeah.
But the food that reminds me most nostalgic food is probably mum's shepherd's pie with ketchup and peas.
Yeah,
it's ketchup again. And
essential.
Cold ketchup.
Cold ketchup.
Yep.
Hot peas.
Ideally. Yeah. Loads of butter in the peas.
What's your favourite meal deal combination? We ask everyone who comes on the show. Your favourite meal deal combo?
Monster Munch pickled onion.
Yeah.
It's got to be that. A Dr. Pepper.
So misunderstood, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I really think so. You don't see it enough.
No, you don't.
And I think egg mayo.
Really? Yeah, nice. Yeah.
So easy to eat. It just you don't really need teeth to eat it. It just sort of disappears.
Often I'm buying a meal deal because I'm going on like a train journey or something, and then I get self-conscious about egg mayo. But left to my own devices, I think I'd buy it more.
It's quite an antisocial smell for the carriage.
It is, isn't
possibly.
It? Possibly. Yeah.
Or a cinema. The worst is when people bring hot food to the cinema. You know when you have someone like bringing a McDonald's or a pizza or a curry.
Yeah.
And they sit behind you in the cinema.
People do that in the cinema.
Yeah. Oh god.
We've got
a whole meal out.
You said that. Can I smell the jalfrezi or am I losing my mind?
Well, you know, there's this deal now in cinema, for Odeon, you pay $13.99 a month. So in Kingston, just after lockdown, the people who obviously were just spending all day in there.
Yeah.
And so they were setting up and they'd have like a hamper and they'd bring out, it was mad.
Post the success of the takeaways you were doing, That clearly gave you the confidence, as you said, to set up Hilltop Kitchen. Tell us about Hilltop. What is Hilltop? If I come there in the morning, what am I getting? If I come there in the afternoon, what am I getting?
It really is the brainchild of Alex and me. We've crammed all of our ideas into it. It's a coffee shop all day. Opens at 9 o'clock in the morning with freshly baked cinnamon buns, sausage rolls, a few other different bits and pieces. We do sandwiches and sort of bacon butties on the weekend. It is a hut on the side of a hill, embedded in the farm, the big view in front of it. It's almost a kiosk in the middle of nowhere. And there's just a sort of mind-blowing view out in front of it over the Surrey Hills.
What's drawing people up there? I mean, clearly you're cooking. But like, what, you know, is it, do we just come to see you?
It's got a few walking routes around it. There's not much else.
No, yeah, okay.
I think it's
come and get very good food.
And a very good cup of coffee. Yeah. And then the lunch menu starts at 12, runs till 3. Very much the Italian backbone to it, sort of sharing antipasti styled starters. Always got fresh pasta on the main menu. Always got a freshly baked focaccia. And then a couple puds. I love a lot of old school sort of baking. There's always sort of cakes up on the window in the afternoon.
What are your favourite old school bakes?
Oh, probably just a big, beautiful cake. Like nothing too frilly, but like a coffee and walnut or a Victoria sponge with a cup of tea.
Mm. Very nice.
Yeah.
There's something reassuring about that. It's like, nice warm hug, isn't it? Tea, Victoria Sponge. You can't beat it.
You can't beat it.
It's become one of the hottest locations to go to in Surrey in the southwest. But talking about hot locations, let's go to your locations, because obviously you get to enjoy some wonderful places and have done. Starting with your go-to weeknight restaurant.
When I lived in Notting Hill, I go to Fez Mangal.
I absolutely
love that. They did a yogurta stew that was like with sort of bread and a big scoop of yogurt and chili butter on top of this sort of bready stew.
Just for the, can you just talk them through the what you just said?
So what
are we talking about there?
I think it was like a chicken tomato stew with probably leftover flatbread inside of it, and then they put a scoop of yogurt on top with chili butter. It was just filthy good.
Yeah.
Best place for a date?
Best place for a date. If she's paying, I'll probably go to the River Cafe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why is the River Cafe so expensive?
I don't know. I don't know. I guess because they can be.
Yeah.
Keep putting the prices up if the bookings keep coming in. They do use some of the best ingredients.
Unbelievable. It's also an indulgence of the amount of staff that are there to deliver the food and make the food.
Pamper you.
It is incredible, isn't it?
Get the waiters in to prep the herbs and then charge people a good amount of money for the food.
I really like having the waiters in, pod the peas or the broad beans.
Amazing, yeah. Yeah.
Do they do that?
Yeah, so all the kind of what might have happened, like junior chefs or the KPs, kitchen porters, might do some of that prep normally. They get in their waiting staff, and before their shift, they are prepping all the stuff.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Best place for a celebratory supper? I mean, you've worked at 2 Michelin star restaurants, you've worked at Sally Clark's as well, which is an incredible place. But where would be your sort of favourite place for a big, big celebration?
I'd love to take the private room downstairs in Sally Clark's. If I could do that, it's just amazing, immaculate service, beautiful food in your own. I like having your own space.
Yeah.
Make a bit of noise.
Yeah.
No one to interrupt you, apart from sort of deliver your food.
Which is fine.
Yeah, the downstairs in Sally Clark's.
Do you do private functions at your pub or not?
Yeah. We've got a little room that we can sort of make private. It's just behind the bar, so you can sort of put your head through the sort of stable door down into the bar if you need a few more drinks.
Do they get rowdy in there?
It has done, yeah. Yeah.
Any lock-ins? I mean, that must be the greatest thing about owning a pub, right?
Yes, I had my 30th birthday there on New Year's Eve, and it wasn't a complete lock-in, but it went on. I was in bed by 2.
Okay, no.
But
not too good.
That's late enough.
Yeah, that's late enough, especially
ready for bed. on the sofa, fully clothed.
Yeah.
Talking about pubs, you're now obviously a famous pub owner, but what is your favourite pub outside your own one?
Just somewhere I used to go when I was younger. We've always gone to Norfolk, and the Lifeboat Inn. It's not glamorous, but they do brilliant mussels and chips by the sea. I think we don't serve much seafood where we are. I really believe, as I said, we've spoken all about the lamb, things like that, and I just think that I would serve a lot more seafood if we were by the sea, and to have mussels and chips in a pub near the sea is
amazing.
Really good.
Where in Norfolk are we for this?
Near Hunstanton, is it north of Norwich?
Yeah.
And they do a pint of Abbott ale to go with.
Oh.
Yeah.
Where do you get your fish from then?
I've always used Flying Fish, who are based down in Cornwall, when I do get it.
So what's the process of that? They drive the whole way up to you?
Everything happens on DPD now. It's amazing what you can order everything in the... Like, by
really?
Courier. Yeah.
So fish lands on the Cornish coast and it's DPD'd straight to your pub.
But yeah, they you know, package it and sell it on, and I think it can be caught and with us, you know, the following day.
Yeah, amazing.
Landed. Yeah.
That's incredible. So your fish and chips must be quite something.
Yeah.
What's the trick to a good chip?
I mean the old Heston method.
Triple
cooked chip.
So talk through it.
Chunky chip that's crispy on the outside and fluffy in the middle. We get agria potatoes, and scrub them down, chop them, then wash all the starch off them, and you want to chop them quite chunky. I mean, I don't know, what's that, 2 centimeters mm-hmm. square sort of thing. Wash the starch off them. We steam them until they're cooked all the way through, then cool them down overnight in the fridge so the starch can set, and then drop them in the fryer at 160 degrees until they're just starting to crisp, then take them out, cool them down again, and then finish them at 180 degrees. And you get that like fluffy middle, crunchy outside. And I like it when they're starting to break as well,
yeah.
Sort of split up and go a bit gnarly. That's when you get all the really crunchy bits in there.
What about your favorite hidden gem?
Szechuan chef in Shepherd's. No, it's not in Shepherd's Bush. It's in...
Where
have you ever been there? Is it that hidden?
Yeah.
I've never found it.
Earl's Court. It's on a side
Earl's
street
Court.
In Earl's Court.
Really?
Yeah. Really good. Just homemade Chinese food. They do their own homemade noodles there. Mm. And they're just really like... They're just super... The guy that serves you is really proud of the food that he serves. And he almost wants to educate you as much as make you, you know,
really?
Your dinner. It's stunning pork dumplings in black vinegar with sliced ginger on top.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Sounds good. And what about your dream long weekend getaway? What and sort of itinerary to match? If you could take 4 days out of the business, take Goose with you, go abroad or go wherever, what would you be doing?
I'd go out to Italy, out to the countryside, probably Umbria. Dad's got a little art studio out there, and I'd go there. The itinerary would be doing nothing. Sit, light the pizza oven there, and watch the sunset. And
so he's got a studio and a pizza oven.
Yeah, the pizza oven's as old as the building.
It's the life, isn't it?
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
What are you drinking out there?
Negronis.
Yeah.
Just soon as the sun starts to dip, or not even.
Then yeah, on it.
God. And yeah. Best sort of Italian dish apart from pizza?
Pasta. I mean, I flipping love pasta. What as a?
What's your favorite? If you could save a pasta dish,
carbonara. It's got to be.
And you, Ben?
Carbonara. I think would be up there.
Really. And do you do it the Roman way, or?
I think I do it the English. I put a bit of double cream in there.
Do you?
I don't care what the Italians say about it. Yeah.
You're an animal.
What about you, Ben?
I actually wrote about this once. I make a really disgusting 90s British carbonara.
What's that then?
Just like overcooking the egg, using streaky smoked bacon rather than guanciale. Just it's like disgusting.
Bastard.
When I first I met my wife in restaurants. But she, actually I didn't, that's a lie. We did work in restaurants together. And I came out and made this like beautiful, authentic carbonara and she used to refuse to eat it. And then I went to her parents' house and her dad turned out this sort of like scrambled egg 90s carbonara muck. And I was very sniffy about it because I was still in restaurants and feeling. And then over the years, I've just learned to absolutely love it.
Fair play.
Yeah.
The British know best after all that. Eh?
No, we don't. If I'm saving it from the waves or whatever the phrase is,
yeah.
It would be a proper version. But.
Finally, Sam, you've been absolutely wonderful. We wish you the best of luck with your pub, with obviously the Hilltop and with everything else going on. Of all the food you mentioned, if you could save 3 of the dishes, you know, some of them could be the handball noodles, your own creations, the dishes you had in Denmark, your own snacks, whatever. Even Ben's fucking bastardised carbonara.
Don't save that.
Sorry. What are you going to be saving?
What am I going to save? I'm probably going to take the Vietnamese beef tartare with prawn crackers, followed by, I think, a carbonara and a Christmas pudding.
Carbonara Christmas.
Weird, it's a horrific meal to sit through.
That's going to be a weird choice, but it does sound amazing. Sam, you've been absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much for coming in. We hope you enjoyed it. You've been a fantastic guest. Guys, we'll see you all next week, including you, Ben. But please don't forget to give us a 5-star rating, leave us a comment, and we'll get back to you. Until then, you can catch us on TikTok, Instagram, and all those other wonderful things as well. Sam, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Sam.